Welcome to World Talk with Friends, where the small world we live on becomes smaller as we discover neighborhoods all over the world by simply talking to our neighbors. This is Haggy Shack Radio Productions. Colleen Kelly is producing with friends Nancy, Nora, Neil, and those we have yet to meet. Welcome to our world.
And we are live. Hi, Nancy. Hi,
yes.
Nora.
We're here. Yes, we're here. Hi there, everybody. It is Nancy here, and this is World Talk with Friends. I've got Nora Willow with you and me and Colleen, who is producing. It is March 8th, 2017, and how are you guys doing today? Because I've got to go turn off the fish tank. I realize it's in the background. Can you hear it?
I'm not hearing it.
No, not me either.
Oh, okay. All right. Sometimes it's heard and sometimes it isn't. So, yes. How you doing, Colleen? You've had such an amazing, since we talked last, because the last time we talked, we announced a schedule change.
Yeah.
It turned into more. Is there anything you would like to, give the audience as far as, your version of what happened, if you think you need to?
Oh, I don't know about all that. I think it's just let it suffice to say that I have resigned from Wolf Spirit Radio, and you and I have partnered up, and I am still in the process of filling the schedule. Other than that, and the new baby coming yesterday, and everything involved with updating the website and stuff, things are really peachy.
Rosalie.
Rosalie Leanne. See, my father's middle name was Lee. My granddaughter's father's middle name was Lee. So we got the Rosalie Lee Ann, and my middle name is Ann, so.
Wow.
That's so nice.
Yeah, that is funny, though, because they took care of three people in one name.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And a beautiful name.
It is. That's very clever.
Yeah. And she's doing good, Colleen?
Yeah, she's doing good. I posted pictures in the chat of her yesterday. She's such a pretty baby. You know, a lot of times newborns are beautiful to the parents. But I looked at her and I went, oh my goodness, she's so pretty. And maybe it's because I'm a great grandma, but I think she is a pretty little new as far as, and she was just a few hours old. So I can't wait for them to come home tomorrow.
Well, don't you think that they look older when they're born than they used to? Because I look at these I've seen kids that, are just a few hours old, and I'm going like, this does not look like a newborn. This looks like somebody who's, been around for a couple of weeks at least.
Right. And I have to say, too, that I was so proud of Jade, because she refused, all the pain stuff they normally give you or try to give you. She opted for one shot and a pain shot, and they didn't inject all of that. So, a lot of women are going, knock me out, and Jade's like, no, I don't want all that stuff in my baby. So,
good for her. She's strong.
She is.
And that's how it should be.
I'm hoping this taught her how strong she really is.
Right.
Well, if that didn't do it, certainly raising a child will.
Is this her first baby?
Oh, yes.
Oh, bless her. Yeah, at the beginning it can be a little bit daunting, but it's an amazing experience. I think it's an honor to be able to to learn how to take care of another human being.
Right. Well, and that'll be four generations under one roof.
Wow.
So.
It's incredible.
This one's stepping back a bit.
One of those things that I, you know, keep going back to in my life is the day that I was looking at one of my siblings. I'm the oldest of 10, so I'm not sure which one it was. But I was looking at their hands because they've got these teeny little hands that even have fingernails, and they work. And for some reason, as a kid, I got this aha moment about, whoa, the complexity of life and the amazement of it, just in that teeny little hand.
Yeah, I was looking at hers yesterday in that picture, and her nails are long. I was like, uh-oh. Because, you know, they put those little mittens on them and all the stuff to keep them from scratching their face. And I was like, need new some baby scissors immediately.
Oh, and their hair.
They said she has a full head of hair, but they had a little, you know, they put those little caps on them in the hospital. So I didn't get to see it. I'll see it tomorrow. But they said she's got a full head of hair.
Some babies are born with hair on their backs. I've seen it.
Well, yeah, there is this fuzzy down on them. Luckily.
That's adorable.
Most of that falls off. Yeah, it's not so cool for little girls, though.
No, but it's just, they look like little monkeys, like little alien monkeys with hair. I'll never forget when my daughter was born. They, you know, they took her out and they kind of gave her to me, put her on my chest. And she was looking at me and her eyes were like, you know, the pupils or the whole thing was like, one was on the left and one was on the right. And I'm like, what the hell was that? And they're like, oh, don't worry, it's normal. They're going to get, you know, fixed.
Yeah, their eyes go crazy sometimes. You're like, whoa.
That freaked me out because it was my first baby and I thought, oh, like, there's something wrong with her. Yeah, it's a fascinating experience.
And you know, when my mom went, when she'd go to have a baby, she'd go down to this little hospital. And she'd stay in there like 5 days or more.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, my sister-in-laws, and this was a few years back, quite a few, probably 18, but she had the baby on Christmas morning and was there at Christmas dinner.
Wow.
Wow.
This is crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, back in the days of the pioneers, they say that women had their babies and, you know, like, they'd have it in the morning and be out working the fields in the afternoon. I'm like, damn, those were some strong women.
Yeah. I remember reading a book that was talking about this. I don't remember the book. But that there was this Chinese lady in China that they would, that's exactly what you said. They would have the baby and then just get up and start working in the fields. And I'm like, whoa. How?
Necessity, I guess. I don't know. Because, you know, now they make them stay down for a little bit because they worry about the clotting and all that kind of stuff. But they still don't keep them in the hospital as long as they used to. And maybe part of that's whole, you know, insurance stuff, you know, and liability and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, I am going to point out about the story about them always going back into the fields and stuff. We hear the story, but we actually don't know how many of them died from it.
That's true.
That's true.
Because, you know, mortality rate was quite high. You just had a baby.
That's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know these things. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes you got to be sensible. And again, it's that concept of, well, you know, I went to the dentist today, and a few things happened there that were, you know, let's say, inspiring but odd. Now, I've been going to the same place for well over a decade. And today, I go in every 6 months, but I, you know, they're always saying to me, you know, you haven't had the x-rays. No. And every time I get this flack from them, right? So today, the doctor walks in, the nurse said to me, you're not going to get x-rays, right? And I said, nope. And she was, okay. And she didn't argue. She just confirmed what I was going to do. And then the doctor came in and did the same thing. And I thought, well, this is weird. They've all of a sudden, they're not arguing with me. What's this, you know? And so then we proceed to have the exam thing. And she starts to talk to me. And since the last time we had a conversation, which may have been 6 months, but no more than a year ago, she has completely turned around as far as her view of medicine. She's into doing meditation and yoga. She's, her kids are about to go into college, but they're not leaving home, so it's not like, you know, some major changes thing. But, you know, she was like understanding the radiation, and now she was much more willing to listen about the shungite. And this is not the first time that I've seen this change, that there is change happening out there. And one of the customers that came to us just recently had been referred to us by a physician who said, don't use my name. Right? It's like,
wow.
Even the physicians are starting to know this stuff. And, well, they know it now. They're starting to, well, maybe they're just learning it. But there's a real amazing awakening. But the one that got me was that, like, again, I've been with these people for quite a while. And I'm standing there, and the doctor's there, and she's a woman. And the receptionist was there. And we started to talk about the power of women and the difference in everybody's view of who and what we are, that it was changing. And so I used the, you know, analogy that we like about if the plane's in trouble and the oxygen mask drops down, you put it on yourself first, because you're worthless if you're not okay. And it was like the aha moments for these people. It was like, wow, that's true. And I really do think that we're going through an enlightenment, some kind of an ascension thing. And it's happening very kind of subtly and quickly and without any drama. Either of you noticed that?
Yeah, I have. I definitely have noticed it. It is very subtle. But if you concentrate and are focused on the way people are behaving, you start seeing these things, as you said, these subtle changes. From my perspective, they're subtle. But they're significant. Things that maybe they wouldn't have said before, they wouldn't have thought, they weren't open to discussing or to at least contemplating or considering, now they are. So for me, yes, I confirm and agree with what you say.
Did you happen to catch the show last night with Riley Hunter?
No, unfortunately. No, yesterday I wasn't really on the radio.
Well, he, and Colleen, I have to ask you this because it was starting to weird me out. When Riley was telling his story, I swear to God, I've had a guest on that told the same story that had almost the same accent. Did you get any feeling like that, Colleen?
No, I didn't, Nancy.
I'm going to see if I can't, because I think I even know who it is, but it was a weird thing. But I really honor Riley because he's telling a story that is so, let's say, it's a typical kind of story. You know, I was an alcoholic. I was not a very happy person. And then certain things happened, and I suddenly began to realize that there was more to life than what I knew. And I started following little breadcrumbs leading me to different books and different people that then opened up my eyes to a different reality. And it was a, you know, it just seemed like such a typical story that, again, I was trying to say, well, was there any big thing that made this difference? But it was like, no, not really. It was just sort of like a gradual, but then a very quickly accelerating transition. And go ahead. Can you comment on it?
No, I'm listening. I'm still trying to kind of get the hang of it because I didn't hear the story. It's intriguing.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, you know, a lot of people, well, I had a near-death experience, or I saw a UFO, or I, you know, was there when Kennedy died. You know, those things are impactful on a person, and so they kind of, like, open up to other realities because the one they were just in just seemed to shatter. And so you have a lot of people that happens to. But right now, I'm seeing a lot of people just opening up, just waking up. Very quietly by themselves. And I was trying to get him, like, well, is there anything you can tell people who are in this process that, you know, might help them? And it was, yeah, basically use what's there. Read the books. Listen to talk radio. You know, just analyze.
Follow the clues.
Follow the clues.
And talk to yourself.
And talk to yourself.
That's, I think, very important. Yeah, it's happening. I mean, everyone's experience is different. But there is still a bit of resistance. Like you can feel that people see there's something going on, but it's a matter of choice, where some people do, as you said, you know, start reading the books or following the clues or opening up, but then there are others that feel there's something different, something wrong, maybe with the world or with their life, but they seem too afraid to really jump in the unknown, where, because you need to have a lot of trust, I think, when it comes to this. So I still see people that you see that they feel there's something, but they're still unable to take that step.
Yeah, it does seem to be based on some kind of a fear thing. But then you look and you go, well, what seems to be the difference? And it seems to be that when you've gotten to the bottom of life, and you don't have any trust in anything because you're at the bottom of life anyway. You know, it's not a matter of trust. It's just a matter of finding your way out, following the breadcrumbs. You got nothing to lose. You might as well. Nothing else. You don't trust anything else. So you just go with it. And so there's nothing to impede you because you don't have any hope anyway. So you see this little breadcrumb and you start to follow it. And then you get the people that actually say, oh man, I ain't going there.
Yeah.
And I just...
Yes. You know. Sorry, go ahead, Nancy.
Well, I don't really know where I'm going with this, except that I didn't know what was going to happen on the show. And I wasn't really like, I don't know why. I wasn't really looking. I know that there were things I was thinking, okay, we can do this tomorrow. We can do this tomorrow. But all, you know, it was like none of that was coming to my head. But what came to my head was, the picture of the dragon that is on cosmicreality.com, the radio station. And a lot of you who've been over there, you're going to go, I don't remember seeing a dragon. Well, it's because it's actually behind everything that you're seeing. And if you scroll all the way down to the page, you'll see the dragon.
Right.
And this picture just kept coming to my head, and I'm going like, okay, dragon, dragon. What is it about the dragon? What seems to, because when I was first setting up Cosmic Reality Radio, Dolly and I had a weird thing with dragons. All of a sudden it was that thing that was so synchronistic that it's got to be thought in action. And, you know, Dave Corso, we asked him, can you tell us about dragons? And he was like, oh man, they're so much fun. I ride them all the time. And, you know, so it seems like on the other side, dragons are very known. We know dragons from ancient fables, you know, but I think that most of us would never have really thought of them as being real. They were just stories. And yet, the farther we get into this new reality, the more prevalent the dragon energy seems to become. And so I said to you, Nora, I said, you know, let's just see if we can't touch the guides and just kind of like talk about dragons and just tell what we're thinking, you know, channeling. We don't channel, we sort of hear things, you know, it's like a, you know, group of people in your head and they start saying, well, it's this and it's this and it's this, just to let it out there, to put the energy out there, just to let it go, because obviously if I'm fixating on it, it means that it's blocked somehow and we need to get it flowing.
Right.
So I know I put you on the spot, but did you?
No, not at all. I mean, since we spoke about the dragon before, you know, the show, I've been kind of getting into this kind of space of what do dragons mean to me. And dragons have always fascinated me since I was a kid. So the dragon theme has existed in my life. And there was always a part of me that felt that I knew they existed. So when people say, for example, no, but it's just a myth. And I'm like, no, it's not a myth. They're like, oh, come on, what, you believe that dragons are real? I'm like, yeah, I believe they are. Now, whether they're still here in a physical form, I don't know. But my feeling was that they have been here before. So whatever people kind of shared in stories, you know, the ancient times, they weren't just inventing. Because it wouldn't really make sense, I think. That's just my opinion. I mean, why would people... I mean, I know that humanity has an amazing imagination, but there must be some truth. So, I mean, I always tried to understand what is my connection to the dragons. I never really understood it. Till now, I mean, I still don't know why I have this fascination. And I'd have like friends and people that I know sometimes when they get me a gift, they would get me a pendant with a dragon. And, yeah.
Right, hold 1 minute. Hold 1 second.
Sure.
Sorry about that. I saw a message saying something about fish tanks, so I decided I better turn it off, but I didn't want to lose what you were saying on because I didn't have the earphones.
Oh, no, don't worry.
Well, you know, as far as dragons go,
yeah,
I'm looking around here. I've got a dragon lighter that you click the top of its head and this flame from its mouth. I've got bookends that are dragons. I've got a crystal ball. Well, actually, this one's glass. And it has a dragon sitting on top of it with its tail wrapped around the ball.
Nice.
So apparently I, too, have had a fascination over the years because some of this stuff is quite old. Well, I've had a long time, I'll say that.
So. Well, what do you of dragons? I mean, just off the top of your head, what do you think about dragons?
Well, my thoughts are is that they're like dogs in that they're protective of their human or whatever. That they're also protectors of the earth. And they can be nice or they can be not so nice depending on whether you've crossed a line with them or something. But then, you know, you get into all that stuff today about the draconians, because dragon, draco, all those are the same thing, pretty much. Reptilian. And then there's a relationship to birds, because birds and lizards, well, and cats, are all kind of the same origins, and changed through evolution, we've been told. And of course, I'm a cat person too, so I don't know, that's just off the top of my head stuff coming through. But I always wanted, you know, everybody saying we're evolving, and I always said, well, okay, I want to be a fire-breathing dragon with a fluffy tail.
Do you think they're still here?
I think probably, well, according to Stuart Swerdlow, the baby one that got away, wondered if that was the one you got on your website. I think, like fairies and such, that it's quite possible that they do still exist, but maybe in another dimension, reality, whatever. But that because we've been taught that they are myth, that just made up stories, we've stopped allowing it into our perception, perhaps.
Yeah. Just like if you don't believe in something, you stop seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like that David Bowie movie, You Have No Power Over Me, you know, kind of thing, and then zoop, it all kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the reason, okay, I think I've told this story before on air, and I'm kind of thinking I might have told it here. But where this all, see, I did not follow dragons. I wasn't a fan of dragons. I just never thought about dragons. Maybe that's, well, you grew up at the same time I did, Colleen, so it's not our childhood, but it just never seemed to be on my radar. So, Gene Rockefeller had done this spontaneous remote viewing of Antarctica, and she calls me up, and she's all excited, and she tells me this, what happened. She said she realized she was in Antarctica because she'd been there before with Walt, and she saw all these people, all these seemingly dignitaries, not just from human, you know, representatives, but aliens. And that she said, and even John Kerry was there. Now, he's the Secretary of State. And at the time, nobody in the news was telling that Kerry was there. But Jean reported it to me before it was ever made the news. And she said, it's some kind of a surrender. And I said, who's surrendering? And she said, Kerry. And I said, what's he surrendering? And she says, I don't know. It's just what I'm feeling, you know. So it was, that was about, you know, the gist of the report. So I'm like, it was like, okay, but then the next day or so they started talking about Kerry being there, and I'm like, well, how come Jean gets to see this and I don't? And I was a little jealous, to be honest. And so I said, well, and I know that I can't get there. Just remember, she's special. She can get through, and I don't know how she gets through these things, but there's always psychic barriers anywhere in these areas. and a remote viewer would have a bitch of a time getting through if they could. And so I just don't like to go there because it's very scary. They put the fear energy out to the point that you've never been so afraid in your life. So I don't like to do that. So I asked the Jen, I said, Jen, can you get me in the back door? And they said, well, sort of. So they allow me to experience like a holographic depiction of the inside of different areas of Antarctica. And this is days after all this happened. And there was, you know, there was people doing their whatever they were doing, like workers doing their things. And you did feel, I felt, well, it looked like a cave-like sort of thing, but we're in a weird way because you also had, you know, like modern rooms in them too. So there was this cave-like stuff, but so you knew you were underground. And all of a sudden, it stopped being a holograph in that I was watching it. And I suddenly was inside a room and it was very cave-like. I mean, this one didn't have, you know, it wasn't fabricated to look like a human thing. It was cave-like. But the floor was sort of, it had tile start type of thing. And it wasn't too big, but, you know, bigger than a normal room. And I'm standing there, and I'm going like, where am I? I mean, I'm like realizing I'm in there now. And I look at, and I'm looking at this, well, it was a dragon. And it was pacing back and forth, and mumbling, and very old. And I got to stop here to just tell you that there are different types of dragons, apparently. Some look like this one, which looked to be like a T-Rex kind of guy, you know, with little hands in the front and the big, you know, staunchy kind of legs and, yes, the tail and, you know, very reptilian, you know, look to it. You know, some dragons are a little bit more, less reptilian. That's all I can say. But this one was pretty reptilian looking. And he's pacing back and forth. And, you know, he did this pace back, like it was the fourth turn. He turns. And when he did, he noticed me. And he pointed at me and he said, you. And then I woke up. Now, when I woke up, I was very much aware that I'd lost time. I just knew it. I felt it like, okay, it was sort of like, one time I was in the hospital and they gave me a drug that knocked me out so fast I was in the process of signing my name. I never even finished signing it before I was out. And the next thing I know, I was in my bed and I'm like, what happened? And it was hours. It was sort of like I had that same kind of, you know, feeling of disjointed time. And so I knew that something had been told to me, but the only thing going through my head was, they've got to see the dragons. They've got to see the dragons. And I'm like, my interpretation of that was that human beings had to be able to visualize a dragon again to make whatever new leap in energetics is about to happen. That's what I kind of, I don't think it was so much intuitive. It's that knowingness that you get when you can't remember how you know it.
Yeah.
You know? And, so what happened then was that I kind of sat with this information for a bit. And then and there was all sorts of, all of a sudden dragons started showing up every place. You know, this friend of mine did a piece of art on Shungite, and I took one look at it. I said, oh, that's the head of a dragon. You know, I mean, things like this. And, so I then said to I went over and I talked to the djinn again, and I said, look it guys, I gotta understand more. I can't remember what is it that I'm supposed to know about these dragons? What are we supposed to do? And the djinn said, just turn around. And I turned around and there's a dragon there. Now, not like the first one. This was more of the flying dragon, the you know, that has got both, all 4 feet of the same length and, you know, long tail. But the dragon that's pictured on the website, actually, that dragon. And so, and he's standing there, but I'm looking at the side. He's looking away from me and I'm looking at the side of him. And I'm like, oh, wow, cool. And he turned and he looked at me. And when he looked at me, I was looking in the eyes of Jack the Watcher, Gene's horse, Gene Rockefeller. Okay? So I was like, Jack? And he was like, yes. I can have this low rumbling voice, you know? And, well, it's telepathy, but there's voice stuff. I don't know how telepathy does that, but it does. Anyway, with them. So the next thing I know is that, well, I don't remember walking over there and doing this, but the next thing I know, I'm right beside him, and I'm getting helped up on to sit on top of him by the gin, and I'm on top of him, and he starts to move, and when he moved, he felt like a horse, and I went, whoa, you feel like a horse, and he turns around, looks at me, and says, what did you think you were going to feel, you know? And then he takes me on this little voyage to get into the dream time of the people who were involved with the Dakota Pipeline in Standing Rock. And it was funny because there's, I'm saying, what, and oh, and I should say that when, okay, so we start moving, and I think that it's such a powerful experience that I was having that it was almost like I couldn't record it. It was almost like my 3D human brain couldn't take in the information, because you sort of get like these, it's almost like you're clipping it. You know, it doesn't feel like it's this one whole thing. It's like you sort of like become aware of. And then you, I don't know where we go, but then you become aware of it again, you know? So it's like, yeah, you go off and I'm aware, all of a sudden I'm aware that, I'm on him, we're flying, and there is at least five more dragons flying with beings on them, I don't even know who, and all sorts of other spiritual beings. I mean, from, I don't even know who was there. I didn't feel it was archangel energy. It was very much natural, etheric, jinn energy. The jinn were there. The dragons were there. And I'm going like, what are we doing? Where are we going? And I was very much aware of being in the Standing Rock area. I mean, the terrain, that's what it looked like. It was at night. And I said, you know, what are we doing here? And that's when they said, we're going into the dream time. And I'm like, what's that mean? You know, and it's like, we're going to get into the dreams of all these people that are involved in this, both sides. They've got to see the dragon. Okay. But then me, the 3D person, goes, wait a minute, where's free will in this? So I kind of like back out of this thing. And I'm like back here, and I'm going, like, I can't do this without analyzing the free will thing. And guides came in and said, no, there is no free will in the dream time. Because in the dream time, you can use your imagination to create all sorts of scenarios without karma or consequence, which I found fascinating.
Wow.
You know, and so
like a simulation.
It's simulation. And that all they're doing is introducing the dragon database. And that's exactly the way they put it, into their dream time.
Hmm.
So then, wow. I guess I finished the mission because, I just found myself back on Jack. But that was very interesting to me that it gives you an interesting concept of imagination, and when does imagination manifest? You know, there's all sorts of things that come out of that kind of a discussion.
Yeah, I mean, imagination on its own is a fascinating subject because we don't really seem to still understand what imagination is. Are we actually creating something in the etheric? Or is it just something that's a projection and then it just disappears when you don't think of it anymore?
Well, let me tell you a story, try to get an answer on that one. when I got out of the military, and I was offered jobs to continue in the intelligence community, but I just didn't, it wasn't my path. I wanted to be a writer. And so I get a job doing restaurant work, and I proceed to spend all my time writing. And it was because the first thing I started understanding was that it's like any other discipline. You have to practice it to be any good at it. So I just sort of started practicing, just writing different stories and just whatever came into my mind. And I'd been doing that for some months when I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I went, oh, my God, I realized that I had been writing a story. But I was writing, sometimes I was writing the front of it, and sometimes the end of it, and sometimes the beginning of it. But it was a story that if I sat back and I looked at it, I went, oh, my God, all these people are connected. You know, because it was fiction. It was all fiction.
Wow.
It was like, what is this about? So once I saw that, I started to look at it as one complete story and started to develop it and kind of like bring it together. But again, I was working on different sections because, well, the title of it was Battle Captain. And the basic, well, the subject is a confrontation in Germany. And this was written when Clinton was just being elected president. So that's the political environment that was there. It was the 84. So you got this environment of the Soviet Union is disintegrating, but it's still there. And you have the NATO countries all lined up militarily in Germany, and that's where they thought the confrontation would really occur. It was right there on that border. So it was one of those big questions in military history and science of what that was. And so they would have actual exercises there once a year called Reforger, where American troops would come in and they'd play war against the Soviets. And the Soviets on the other side, they would get they would play war against the Americans. It was like, you know, saber rattling. So it starts there where the Soviets actually attack and what happens on the battlefield. Because one of my jobs in the military was to be able to fight this battle as a Soviet. I'd be the Soviet forces, and I'd go up against different levels of American forces. And I never once lost, ever, because it was a brilliant strategy they had. So in the book, of course, they do it, only except they stop, and they hold the Americans hostage. They basically come around and using the Audubon, circle them, and are holding them hostage. And that's where all the action takes place. But it really tells the history of war through World War II. All the way back to World War II, through all the characters that are involved in it, right up to the people that are on that battlefield in 1984 in Germany. Now, the people that were on the battlefield on the American forces, I knew very well, even though they were fiction, because they were based on stories that I had been told by people who had been in Vietnam. In Southeast Asia. And I don't know whether it was a concept of being a mother and they wanted to confess, or they just felt comfortable with me, but I heard more stories of war than most people will ever hear. Men just would open up their hearts and tell me things that they had done and what they had thought and what they had felt. And I think part of writing the book, or maybe the main part of writing the book, maybe that's why it was coming out in pieces, is I needed to purge this information from my own psyche. So all of these characters really are broken characters in that they were soldiers and they'd been in Vietnam. And I understood very well that the people that were telling me the stories were the broken soldiers, but they were also the broken soldiers who were still there. you know, who were still viable soldiers. So I write this book. It turns into being like 600 pages. One person has ever read it, and she picked it up, and 3 days later she put it down. She said that it was the best book she'd ever read.
And wow.
Even though it was brutal. And so I sat there with this exercise, and I asked, I said, okay, so what do I do with this? And they said, you did it. And I said, what did I do? You wrote the book. Right. And I mean, I got into nuclear plants being used as weapons and all sorts of things. I had spacecraft, the shuttle was up there. I mean, all sorts of things. And of course, a large amount of psychic powers. You know, isn't that a hell of a book?
Wow.
But so, they said, well, you already did it. And I said, what did I do? And they said, well, because you wrote the book, it will never happen. In answer to your question about imagination, Nora, long story.
Yeah, I get you.
I think it's not so much if you imagine it. I think if you imagine it and then create a story about it, that's when you can affect realities.
Okay, because I see.
If you wrote the story, it won't happen.
So just imagination on its own is not enough.
I don't think so. I'm not sure. But again, the dreamland tells me probably not. Because that's where you go to practice imagination.
Yes.
And I.
Absolutely.
Okay, now I'm getting the dragon. The dragon's back here. Okay, I'm seeing the dragon again in my head.
Funny enough, I was too. Just in the same second you said it.
When I said focus, you have to focus.
Well, the feeling I got was that dragons have a huge role in the dream world. When you said focus, it just came to me that dragons are vital in the dream world. I don't know what that means. Could it be because of what you said about them entering into the dreamscape? Does it have to do with me seeing dragons in my dreams and knowing that other people have seen dragons in their dreams? Could that be the key?
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, we were in Standing Rock, but I think Standing Rock in and of itself is extremely important and representative of where we are and where we're going. So if they were using that as a symbolic entry point to the dragons being in the dream time, then yes, every human might have dragons in their dream time now.
We
should do a survey and see how many people are dreaming about dragons.
That's true. So the symbol of the dragon, I mean, I guess for us to try to understand what it means, we need to maybe try to understand what the dragon symbol really means to us, whether it's historically or whether it's on a spiritual or like inner level, like, you know, the knowing, what does it symbolize to us? And dragons don't seem to have a direct connection to the reptilians, even though they are reptoid kind of beings or reptile kind of beings. But I think we have to be careful not to mix them up with other beings, because I think just like humans, you know, you have the Homo sapiens, you have even like the Neanderthals, or there are different types of humans, or there were different types of humans. So they fall under the same creatures, but they're different species, or the opposite. I don't know how to say that, but do you get what I'm saying? So it's kind of the same thing with the reptiles. There are different types of...
Well, Dave said that there's different types of dragons.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get specific, but he did say there were different ones. Now, Colleen, in your collection of dragons, is there different types of dragons that you've got, or is it just you're attracted to certain ones, certain species of dragon?
Oh, I don't know. I think that there are different ones, like dogs and cats. I mean...
Yeah, you got the water dragons, the dragons that fly, and then you have the dragons that walk, you know, on the ones that don't fly or swim.
Right.
That's my understanding, I think, of what maybe Dave was trying to say.
I think so, too, and I think not... And, you know, whether they were bred for specific things, I don't know, you know, that could change maybe temperaments and all that sort of thing as well, and capabilities and all of that, if there's truly fire breathers and then there's not fire breathers and all that sort of thing. And then I'm kind of... particularly drawn to the ones in the movies, you know, like when my kids were young, the big fluffy white dragon with a voice like Sean Connery.
Oh, you mean like the one, The Neverending Story?
Yes.
Oh, I love that movie.
I think that's where my fluffy tail thing came from. And that one, that type appeals to me more than maybe a scaly one, although without all the fur, I guess it'd be easier to take care of. not a lot of brushing and shampooing and stuff. But as far as picturing one in my mind, that's a little more difficult, other than, you know, the ones that I have here in front of me kind of plant one. I think I'm kind of partial to a blue one. Don't know why blue, but all the ones I have are green, though. So, I don't know, because all I can really draw on are ones that, the pictures that I've seen.
Well, I've got two of them that I've actually seen, so... Oh, this was a weird thing. So after that I had this episode with Jack as a dragon, I wrote Jean and I said, was Jack ever a dragon? And she said to me, are you kidding me? Even now he morphs into a dragon.
Wow.
So, you know, I guess she's seen him too. But anyway, that picture is... I did find a picture, and then I altered it slightly, and then I took Jack's eyes and I put them in that dragon. So when you look at that picture of that dragon on cosmicreality.com, which is underneath everything, you can see it at the bottom of the page. That has got Jack's eyes. That's what I saw. I saw that face turn and look at me. Let's go flying, lady. Okay. Sounds like a deal.
Yeah, it's amazing. The way you did the way you kind of put the eyes with the picture, it looks really realistic.
Oh, and that was freaky too, because, I mean, I've done a lot of that stuff, and that stuff is normally nerve tension, you know, because you got to be, it just dropped in there and was perfect. I mean, I did a couple of touch-ups with cloning, and that was it. Never had anything happen like that so fast. It was wild.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the picture, I didn't think anything was done to it. Yeah. It just looks so, like, part of the picture. And yeah, I think colors of dragons also may not signify anything, but they may signify something. For me, I mean, I had a dream of two dragons long ago, and I saw two huge dragons, and one of them was white, and the other one was like a purplish color, like it's like a not dark but not light purple. It's like in between. So I don't know that if the colors also make a difference into the meaning Again, dreams are tricky because they're full of symbols, symbolism.
Well, each dragon has a certain frequency. So you would visually see it as a different color. Even if you look at, you know, a whole bunch of similar colors, they would still, you'd still see the, because when you're in the energy of a dragon, when you can see the dragon, when you can feel the dragon.
Yes.
The energy that you're feeling from that dragon, I think, is a frequency that unlocks a lot of your own abilities.
Yeah.
Your own powers.
Yeah, and another thing that I found very interesting in this dream, because I dreamt this really a long time ago. It was maybe in 2007 or 8 or not sure, but I, what struck me was their gentle nature. They were very gentle. So that was, because you usually think that dragons are aggressive and they're scary, and but in the, and I, it's not like, for example, I had this idea that dragons are gentle, but it just happened in this dream, and this is something that I could never really forget. I, every time I think of this dream, I remember that's the thing that stood out more than anything, along with the color of these two dragons. And they were huge. They were huge. So their gentle nature was also, I was like, wow, they're very gentle. So, yeah.
Well, the old guy, he, even though he was, the feeling I got from him, okay, was, I suppose he was scary looking if you thought about it. I didn't feel that. But he was very, very worried. But it was this energy from his heart. Like he was consumed with, you know how the worst thing in the world is about to happen to your child and that awful feeling that you get inside. You know, that's what he was holding on to, this awful energy. And worried, you know, and it was like, okay, so they got to see the dragons. What does this mean? But the Jack Dragon, he was so full of power. I mean, immense power, but just sweet and controlled. You know?
Yeah. Well, do you think that dragons are held, I mean, I don't know why I'm saying this, but do you think that dragons could be held hostage in some way?
Oh, yeah, they're screaming at me, yes.
Yeah, because I just got this, as you were saying, you know, this kind of angst feeling that this older dragon was, or a T-Rex type being was having. I mean, I just got this, like, thing in my head that's telling me that it seems like they're held prisoners. There's some sort of hostage situation for them.
This is going to sound crazy.
What's new?
Okay, I'm seeing dragons. Seeing dragons like in prison. Now they're small to me. I'm like got this grandiose kind of view of it. They're small to me. Okay, but there's a lot of them. And they're being held prisoner. But where they should be is inside people. That the dragons, dragon energy, the energy of magic, of unlimited potential, okay, is something that somehow they took out of us and imprisoned. Well, that's
interesting. That is very interesting. And I'm thinking, so where does this put the physical dragon? So does this mean that dragons...
That's the top of the hour to talk about that. For the break. Right. I'm sure Colleen can give you a break. This is turning into a strange conversation. I love it.
Me too.
Be right back. Well, that was a great song.
I was singing my heart out. How about you?
Say
me too. I was singing.
I said I was singing my heart out. How about you?
I was just listening.
I sing in.
Interesting song.
Lip-sing. I love that song. R. Kelly.
Yep.
It's a good song.
What's the title?
I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly.
There you go. Because our, you know, our archives or whatever we end up doing. Yeah, we should say that what we're doing was we're putting the, this show will show up on Tuesday's schedule at 4 to 6 as a replay. That's because we do want people to come to this show and from all over the world and just tell your story. You know, we've got it in an early slot so that it'd be more convenient for people. And please, you know, get in touch with us. CosmicReality.net. You can go to the contact that's up now. I do have to put it up on the .com one. But, you know, we want to be able to talk to, because I've learned so much talking to Nora and Neil from Bangladesh, you know, that about different places in the world, because we're all the same sort of family. And so anyway, the archives. So right now we're trying to get them up on YouTube, every one of them. And you can go to, is it Haggy Shack Radio? What's your station on YouTube, Colleen?
It's Haggy Shack Radio. I've got it up on my website. There's a link.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I've got to put that up online. And then you can go to Cosmic Reality, that studio. And you can go over to N.L. Hopkins. I've got a lot of the older ones from before this, but as soon as we made the station, I set that up. We're still building. We're still trying to figure it all out, but we're having a good time doing it, so we must be doing it right, because if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong. So we were talking about, I should say that you can go over to Haggy Shack and go to the donation button, okay? Donate to Haggy versus Cosmic Reality. We take donations, but it's for Shungite purposes. It's not for the radio. The company actually pays for the radio. So we don't need money if you're supporting radio. If you're supporting radio, support Colleen, please. And if you give her $30 or more, you will get three of the S4 stickers, which is a good deal because you're paying the same price you do on the store, but you're not paying shipping. So you can do that for Colleen, and then you'll get yourself S4 stickers, and you will be happy. And then you'll want more, and you'll come back to me.
Shungite changes your life.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It sure did mine.
Mine too.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing.
Thank you, Gaia.
Yeah, you know, and again, it's one of those kind of magical things. Maybe the reason that I can sit here and contemplate the fact that there may be supposed to be a dragon inside of me, you know, to actually be able to instinctually think, you know, that might be true. Maybe somehow or another, the really terrible thing they did to humanity was to divorce them from an energy field that should be there that's not, that we understand as being dragon energy.
Well, I have a little thing. So what if the whole story of the serpent was actually misinterpreted, as many of us think, and that serpent was actually a dragon?
Well, you see that some dragons are portrayed as serpents, that they
yes.
don't have any legs. I wondered about this myself. I mean, what was it that was said? Oh, man, we're going to get in trouble here, Nora.
Aren't we already?
Yeah. Are we live? Oh no. When you think of the story, and again, to me, everything we're doing is just making up stories. And yet, you still gotta figure out what the story says, right? So, you got Adam and Eve supposedly, the only people on the earth, and they're in this Garden of Eden, and all of a sudden there's this snake, they call it a snake, that's all we know, snake. Or at least that's the translation. Good Lord, we could have been a lot of things if we knew what the original words were. But this snake has come down to us, so snake it is. So the snake says to Eve, you know, I have delicious fruit here, you know, you should try it. And she's like, no, God said that we couldn't eat of the tree of knowledge. This is a tree of knowledge, so it's the fruit of the tree of knowledge. I mean, I think a lot of people just kind of like brush that off, the tree of knowledge.
Now, why would God not allow humans to have knowledge?
Well, that was kind of her question.
Exactly.
And the response was, because if you eat from the tree of knowledge, you will be as gods. That's not the exact, I used to know this, oh gee. You will be as,
you will be like the gods.
Difference of, okay. If you eat from the tree of knowledge, you will know the difference between good and evil and therefore be as gods.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about that. To be a god, you have to know the difference between good and evil. I mean, this
that's
is
a, powerful.
Okay, because right now what we're analyzing, and we're just analyzing it, this is all talk, okay, is to reassess what we've always thought was evil, which was a serpent figure saying, eat from the tree of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
And yet, the tree of knowledge tells you the difference between good and evil. Do we know what's good and do we know what's evil yet?
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is part of awakening that, you know, I was talking about in the beginning, is that things that you thought were good all of a sudden are turning into evil. And I'm sure that the reasons I'm trying to, what I try to do on these shows is really kind of open up to the collective consciousness. Just tell me what you guys want to talk about. Let's talk about it. So if I'm talking about good and evil again, and we're talking about the potential possibility that maybe, you know, the serpent is not the bad guy in this picture. Now, so what was God's response to it? You know, how did God react? Well, God knew that they had eaten from the tree of knowledge because they tried to cover their nakedness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you ate from the tree of knowledge. So, okay, they covered their nakedness. So what does this mean? Why? Because you know now, if you've eaten from the tree of knowledge, the difference between good and evil. Why do you want to hide your nakedness? What's that about?
Yeah, because you lose your innocence. So okay. Knowing evil is losing innocence. And Adam and Eve must have been just like little children in the sense that being in this... Okay, so this is kind of how I see it. They were innocent, extremely, completely innocent. They don't know that evil exists. They don't understand what evil is. They just are in the state of being, of innocence. And after they ate from the tree, they knew the difference. So they lost their innocence. But here's where the paradox is. That I think that what happened was good. because I think the true evolution of spirituality is knowing the difference between good and evil and going back to that innocent state, even with the knowledge of evil. Now, imagine how powerful that is. It's easy to be... I'll tell you something that my daughter shared with me yesterday that shocked me. She told me something. She said to me, I remember... It broke my heart because, you know, the way she said it was very, very touching. She said, I remember... And that's how connected she is. She said, I remember that when I was very young, I could connect very easily to, you know, to God. She said, I remember the exact moment when she says, I remember it, that something disconnected. And she was in a summer camp at the time. She was in Lebanon. And she said, that period, I felt like someone was leaving me. She said, okay, I know I miss, you know, everyone, the family, but she said that I knew they were there. So it's not that she was feeling abandoned, but she was crying nonstop. She said, I felt like someone was leaving me. And she said, that's the moment where my connection to God became more difficult. She said, but now it makes sense to me. I understand. I'm quoting her. She said, now I understand why that happened. Because it's easy to be a spiritual person or be good when it is effortless and that's what you know. That's all you know. There's innocence. She said, but disconnecting is part of that process. Because in the moment of disconnecting, you get the choice. So you choose. Are you going to keep that connection and work for it? Because when the disconnection happens, you have to figure out why it happened and you want to get yourself back to that connection. Or else you're going to take the other road and say, oh, well, all this is not true and I was just imagining it. And then maybe go on to another path that's more of a lower energetic way of being. Now imagine, she said that to me. So this kind of falls into the story of Adam and Eve.
Well, and just, how old is your daughter?
She's 14.
Just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Kundalini is also depicted as a serpent. And the Kundalini is the feminine, creative, evolutionary force of infinite wisdom that lives inside every single one of us. So that's, you got the serpent, you got Nancy's, the dragon, we need to get that back into us, and the Kundalini. So you have that whole Adam and Eve and the serpent and the garden and the eating of the apple and the wisdom all tied in to that Kundalini, feminine aspect.
And you know, as weird as it is, don't you remember the show before this last when we were talking about the orgasmic energy?
Yes.
And that often, I'm not exactly sure. Is that what they talk about the Kundalini energy, or is there even something more than that? Or are they simultaneous?
Well, I think that because orgasm with its own sexual energy, I think it's kind of misunderstood, because I think that orgasm is more about the energy of it than the sexual aspect, because you can, in meditation, when you reach, this is hard to explain. Used to, when I meditated and would visualize the white light, the energy, surging through my body, it was like a lifting up from the ground up, all the energy from the feet up, rising through, and I felt like I expanded clear into the, you know, the whole universe. And that sensation was quite similar to orgasm. But was there,
yeah, it's like
there
Nirvana.
There was no sexual data with it, or at least not for me. It was just a whoosh. And
powerful.
So and it felt like it went, you know, like right up from the base of the spine, up through the spine, out through the top of my head. You know, so for me, as far as I can determine, it was as a kundalini rising,
yes,
you know, lifting up, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, because I think, as you said, because it's so misunderstood, and people, the ironic thing with this, the obsession with, you know, with sex and these things, is I think on a subconscious level, people yearn for that reawakening, but because they don't understand it, there is this obsession. But if we're going to talk about the serpent being removed or the kundalini not rising, when that happens, let's say on a physical level, it stops. It doesn't, because the true sexual nature, whether it's on a physical level or on a spiritual level, because there are two things that are connected, the true function of the human being, the way God, I think, created us, is for it to have a full experience that starts from the bottom up, as you said, just like what you explained, Colleen, when you did the meditation. But I think there's a blockage, just like emotional blockages, you know, when you go to a psychologist or a therapist and they try to help you with your blockages, it's an energy blockage. When you are depressed, it's because you have energy blockages in your body, in your emotional body. So I think this is also what it is. So when people, let's say, perform this act and they do have this experience of orgasm, it stops. There's a blockage. It doesn't rise up. And I think that's where the key is there.
Unless you focus on it.
Yeah, of course, when we're talking, of course, about the state of humanity, in the sense that they don't. I try to share with people this idea of the connection of the spiritual with sexual energy, and they look at me and they're like, "What are you saying?" They don't understand, because to them, this is something bad. This is something to be ashamed of. It's something unclean. The idea of sexuality has been tainted. And, of course, this was done on purpose.
Well, if we go back to our previous conversation, it happened when they took from the tree of knowledge. Because that's when they knew of their nakedness and lost
their innocence. So do you think that's a coincidence that the first action, the first reaction that Adam and Eve did were to cover themselves. So there was an automatic feeling of shame, an automatic feeling of no more innocence. Because if you're innocent, you can walk naked and there's nothing in your mind. You can see another person naked and you're going to think anything. So that it's pure, innocent, natural. Even animals, you know, they walk around. They don't have this way of thinking. It's just they're innocent. They're natural.
Well,
it's the breaking of innocence.
I think that whole, they realized they were naked, is kind of a metaphor for they were spiritual beings. And then the realization of being suddenly a physical being was kind of the shame thing. That to me is like the fall, when your pure spirit, pure energy, and then you ate of this apple or whatever the hell it was. That's a physical thing. That's a 3D earth thing. And to me, that's what the whole eating of that tree of knowledge was when they realized, you know, that they're in this physical body all of a sudden. And maybe, you know, then they start experiencing feeling hungry and cold and all of those other things that we human creatures feel. At least that's the way I've often thought of that as I'm trying to make sense of that whole myth story.
Yeah, I think what you have to do is you have to go a little farther into the story to where you pick this up, this concept up, because when God realized they're naked, the statement made by God is that now that you've taken from the tree of knowledge, you have to experience the tree of life. And that's when they get thrown out of the Garden of Eden. And at that point, that's where you have, you know, that they're hungry and all this other things that go along with it. Because they're no longer in the Garden of Eden, they're in the Garden of Life. 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because again, going back, if you eat from the tree of knowledge, you will know the difference between good and evil, and therefore be like gods. So, does this mean that when you enter into the 3D environment that you have to sort of like live out the story to learn the difference between good and evil? Because you take from the tree of knowledge and you got to learn good and evil. Well, it didn't tell you how you were going to learn it, did it? It didn't say, and in an instant, you're going to know the difference between good and evil. No, the next thing that happens is you get thrown out into the wilderness of 3D survival.
Into the real world, so
yeah,
to speak.
You know?
Well, you know, as a spiritual being, there really is no good and evil, right and wrong. You know, it just is, because it's masculine, feminine, negative, positive, and one is not better than the other. It's only in this 3D where there really is a difference because of our perspectives, our beliefs, you know, all the fake stuff that's been thrown at us according to esoteric teachings, anyway.
So maybe the answer is the difference between good and evil is there isn't any.
Remember when I got that download and I was telling you about the idea of artificial intelligence and how the virus kind of started? And I told you that I realized that there's really no such thing as good and evil.
Tell the story.
Okay, so yeah, it's very complicated. I mean, I tried to kind of share the story and on Dimensional Mind Talk on Saturday, and it's just, I just realized how difficult it is to share or to express downloads. It's really difficult, but practically the gist of what I kind of got was that when the rebellion happened, it was these beings that wanted to experience things, creation, without necessarily being connected to source right away, to God. Because they kind of became aware of their selves. Something happened within their beingness where they became aware of themselves. Before, it was more like, not a hive mind, but it was a oneness. And the moment that there was that I'm me, that's when this kind of virus, between brackets, happened. It's just like in the movie The Matrix when, you know, Neo meets the architect And he finds out that the anomaly in the matrix is actually choice. So maybe the beings before, like the angels, or they didn't really have individual choice. You get what I'm saying? It was a oneness, a connectedness of all together. There was no such thing as an individual choice. So it almost feels like this rebellion happened when this being, Lucifer, whatever you want to call it, realized its own individual beingness. And obviously this is a very, it's a very daunting feeling, I think. And, you know, when you get to learn something new, sometimes you don't really know how to act or react to it. So I think there was this breaking. Practically what I got was there was this breaking, this disconnection of saying, okay, I want to experience my own self and I want to make my choices on my own. And that's where I realized, is it really bad? So you get what I'm saying? It could be viewed negatively as, let's say, artificial intelligence or the archontic energies. They seem very evil. But what I got was, it was a need to break off because of this individual awareness. And then maybe it went wrong.
Well, you know, what you're getting into is that concept of, okay, let's think of the mind of God, the source God, this amazing energy field that knows everything, is all powerful. I mean, assuming that this definition of God exists, okay, every time God thinks, it's going to manifest. Now, what I'm going through this. This was decades ago. I'm going through this in my head. Okay, so everything you think is going to manifest. So if you know that and you know everything, you know that when you think and you manifest, all of a sudden you've changed reality completely. And now you're no longer God. You're dependent on your own manifestations to believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know this, and I'm assuming God would know that if I could figure it out, okay? So I said, okay, so what would I do first? And the first thing I would do is create a being that if my further creations got out of hand, they would step in to stop them from getting to the point where they say there is no God. Because if they say there is no God, then God ceases to exist and all of everything is gone. Okay, so you create the archangels and the angels. Don't let them
keep order.
Because once God does this and starts manifesting, it's really out of his hands, or her hands, or its hands, or our hands, you know? And why would God even bother with this, you know? Well, because if you're God, are you going to sit there knowing everything? I mean, okay, let's say I understand algebra. I can say, yeah, I took algebra, okay? Right now in my head, do I know if I know algebra? No, I don't know algebra until I start doing algebra and see if I can do it. The fact that I think I can do it isn't the requirement. The requirement is, can you do it? Well, I honestly don't know unless I do it.
Right.
And I suspect that God's mind works something like that. So God would be continually imagining. You know, we started out talking about imagination. Well, imagination may be the key to everything.
Exactly. That's how I see it. You're right. And it is such a complicated subject, because the moment we start thinking about the mind of God, or it almost feels like our brains cannot comprehend it. So what we're doing here is trying to delve into a dark area that a lot of people shy away from, because talking about it may help us to understand things a little bit more. I mean, my when I start explaining this download, my head hurts.
Well, it's like
it is a complicated subject. It's not easy. There's so much depth and unknowingness in it.
Well, but I think it's trending in the collective. I think that's why we're having this conversation. And as far as understanding the mind of God, I think I probably have a better chance of understanding it than most people because of an experience that I had. And hopefully, if you just kind of like just very get really focused on my words and my voice, okay, because I'm going to try to just give you a glimpse of this. It's not scary, but it will bring you to a profound realization. And the profound realization is this. I was in church. I was standing up. It was hot. I can give that kind of an excuse. But what happened next was not because I was getting a little faint. All of a sudden, the church disappeared. I disappeared. The only thing I could see was nothing. I could hear nothing. There was nothing, nothing, nothing. There was no sound. There was no feeling. There was no emotions. There was no thought. And I said, "Where am I?" And this voice said, "Nowhere." I know what it's like when there's no God. Nothing.
But that's the paradox. That is God.
Exactly.
It's the emptiness.
It's all and everything.
It's amazing. And I think when we meditate and we quiet our mind, that's how we can connect. Remember when we always, when people, like some people speak about meditation and how to connect, you notice that the moment you clear your mind, you start getting those revelations. You start seeing those symbols in your mind's eye. I think the magic is in that emptiness because it's a paradox. The emptiness, there is everything within that emptiness. It's mind-boggling.
When you hear of shamanic journeying, very often they will incorporate the drum. That drum is to lock them into 3D physicality so they can get back. But when you're doing drum work and meditation, where you want to hear, where you want to be, where your consciousness wants to focus on is the space between the drum beats.
Right.
It's really fun. It's really fun because all of a sudden it's like nothing, 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 nothing. But once you get to be able to visualize the concept of nothing, then the concept of everything, everything, everything becomes much more physical, for lack of another word. Colleen, I wanted to ask you, you said you used to do this meditation. I mean, you just gave an explanation of meditation and the outcome of it done well. So, Nora actually referred to it as a meditation, and I think she meant that you put us into a meditative state because that's what I was feeling. It was very real to you. It was very well described. But you don't do this anymore. Is that correct?
Right.
And what led you away from it? I mean, because I think that a lot of people... I think maybe we were on a timeline where that was very relevant and we're always happening to a lot of people. And somehow or another, we got away from that. And I'm kind of like wondering what happened with us.
Well, I know with me, it was just life in general. You know, lots of things changed. The amount of time that I had to spend on meditation changed. I got custody of my two oldest grandchildren who were then, one was an infant, one was a toddler. Shortly after that, I started my flea market, which I started work at 6 in the morning and didn't end until 9 at night, and then come home and still have all kinds of stuff to do. So that's when I was meditating a lot, that's when all of that changed. I still tried during other periods of my life and had visions then that were that told me what was going to happen, and they did. And then life changed again, and we moved back to Indiana, and I had to go to work, and got my grandkids back again, and it's just sometimes life gets in the way of all of that stuff.
That's so profound, because life gets in the way of the other stuff. Because what I'm seeing in your story is, you know, a representation of what we've been talking about. You basically had a lifestyle that, if nothing else, gave you the ability to meditate and, you know, to go to the outer reaches of your own beingness. And then suddenly you're thrown into 3D reality, and you've got all these things that are keeping you distracted, and you're going through life, and, you know, like, it, you know, that's what happened. You know, we were there, sitting there in the Garden of Eden, and then all of a sudden this question of knowledge comes up, and, you know, and it's like, we're the ones manifesting all of this. It's a story Adam is telling Eve, or Eve is telling Adam, or they're creating together. What happens if? I'm not so sure that we're computer simulations. I don't know that that's true, but I do think we might be imagination simulations. We're in somebody's dream, for crying out loud. Wake up!
Well, if we're all, as Jesus says in the Bible, know ye not that ye are gods, and that we're all connected to, well, people say God. I have trouble with that word God. I prefer source or whatever. But we're all connected to that, and that's who we truly are. And this physical self is just a temporary housing. And as you said, you know, if God knows everything and, you know, all that, I think that we as physical beings contribute to sources or God's experience in 3D. You know, the old myths and stuff that, you know, they had gods that had 1,000 eyes and all that so that they could see everything. I don't know how they heard everything, because it didn't say anything about having 1,000 ears or anything. I think that's all metaphor for we as physical beings experiencing life on this 3D world. I'm sure there's other worlds where that's also true. That we're all part of that collective everythingness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You see, I tend to think abstractly.
Do you feel the need to, or do you feel that you should need to feel that you should be going back into that kind of meditation?
Yes, I do from time to time. And I do attempt. It's much, much more difficult for me now than it used to be. Used to, I could meditate with a house full of kids and dogs and cats and a husband. I could still block all of the noise and the activity out and still meditate and have the visions and go off somewhere. Because it did feel that way. It was like my body was meditating, but I was out somewhere else. But it is just much more difficult for me now, and it could be that whole everything in its own time sort of thing. But I do, from time to time, sit for a few minutes, and I have to sit on the bed or else I'm out. and do it. So, but yeah, I have felt for quite a while that I needed to somehow get the time, and I never really did it on a specific schedule. It was just when I felt like, okay, now's the time to do this. But I need to find that space in time, you know, now, so that I can.
Well, how about this? How about that we make the space and time on this show? Because what you demonstrated was that, to me anyway, Nora, if I'm wrong, you tell us, okay? Because I don't need to be right, I just need to know. So, but Colleen, if you could just talk people through for the same way you did it, you know, every show that we do here, I think that it will give you, you know, because all you do is on radio. So incorporate it into your life, which is radio, and make it part of all of our lives and share that. It might be what we need now. Maybe it is the place in space and time.
Well, it would be a lot of dead air time.
No, I'm just saying.
Okay, everybody, I'm meditating now.
Oh, see ya.
Did you get that? This show's being brought to you telepathically.
You should have your guest as Dolly. She'd love it. Okay, but no, I'm serious. You know, just talk through the feeling, the process of visualization of when, you know, your entire energetic body is aligned and the kundalini is moving your spirit to touch the higher reaches of the source.
Well, I've got to say that I can't say often. I start to say often. I do that sometimes just by thinking about it, just by recalling that feeling. So maybe it's that I don't have to go through the whole process now, if I can, you know, recall the feeling, see that light, and all of that stuff.
Exactly, because you are there already. What I think happens, and this is why what I'm trying to get to kind of, is that we've done all these things. Okay, we've gone through the meditative process and the time and the space and the silence and all that. But now we know what that is. But more importantly, in the universe, it's still there. That moment and place and space and time, okay, is still there. So I think it's almost like a remote viewing thing, that we think of it, we recall it, and boom, we're right back there. Does
that sound familiar? Yeah, that's the word. That's true, recalling it. Because if you've experienced it, it's just like recalling the smell of a flower. You know, the moment you recall it, you actually feel like you have the flower in your hand and you can smell it.
Does that sound right, Colleen?
Yes.
That's why I'm saying when you described it, it was like, yes, I've been there too. And as you described it, you brought me back to that moment in time. And I think maybe if we do this, you know, once a week, spend the process of you saying, hey, I can take the recording and we can play it as the intro to the show, you know, because it just invokes the imagery and therefore the energy and therefore, using ourselves as the great source of this Kundalini creative feminine energy.
You kind of put her on the spot there, Nancy.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if it's the logistics of it all or what the heck it is. And,
Will you give me permission to use that part of the tape?
Well, sure. I guess if I don't sound moronic. Well, never mind. I'm still, you know, I've been doing this for 2 years. People already know.
I'm having so much fun thinking about different, for the two new shows, and we do have the two new shows, and they were great. They were great shows. I put together these intro outro things, and I had so much fun doing it. But I was also, well, for Nora, I did the Twilight Zone.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and the Star Trek one for Jan's show. But it's like I'm kind of got myself into this old TV show themes, you know? It's like there's some nostalgia seemingly. The energy of nostalgia seems to be permeating things recently. Is anybody feeling that?
Off and on.
Yeah, me too, off and on.
Yeah, but more so than normal.
Well, I think partially it has to do with when times were simpler, at least as far as our perception of it all. And although we're all kind of truth seekers, truthers, if you will, often with finding out the truth, it's more discomforting than comforting. So I think that perhaps we long for simpler times, more innocent times, as far as we are concerned, you know, and our awareness of what was really going on out there. Music was, you know, I know you've been playing a lot of oldies, and I like a lot of the oldies, too. They seem to have more heart, more feeling, more passion. That's all a part of that, is trying to bring back and those more innocent, more hopeful, we had life ahead of us kind of stuff, you know. Anything was possible. In our youth, you know, and now we're like kind of like winding down, sort of. That makes sense. I
actually not winding down. I'm feeling better about what I can do. I mean, because before it was a matter of there were very few people that really understood what the problems were, and now we have a lot more people that understand the problems and a lot more people that understand the solutions. And that's what gets me excited, is that there's solutions now. You know, just there's so many different solutions. Every time you turn around, there's another solution. It's just a matter of what we focus on.
Well, and that might be it, too. You know, back in nostalgic times, we were a lot more self-sufficient. If we had a problem, we figured out the solutions instead of depending so much on governments and churches and all that to do it. You know, we cooked from scratch, we sewed, we made clothes, you know, we repaired things, and in today's throwaway society and our dependence on fast food and delivery and all that kind of stuff, I think there's a whole lot of boredom because we're not doing stuff for ourselves. And realizing our own abilities and powers.
Right.
Yeah, I think society has become too lazy. And when you become lazy, you start indulging in things that are meaningless. So this is how I also see the younger generations. Younger, I mean, even, you know, 30s, and I just, you know, it's like, oh, I'm bored. I just want to go out and waste time. Like, it's distraction. They always try to find distractions to fill that emptiness. And there's no more patience. It's like everyone wants their needs satisfied.
Don't you think it's the self? That it's exactly what you said a little bit ago about the dream you had. Concerning self in the AI. It's like what you were saying, if I remember correctly, it was that it was the realization of self that started everything happening.
Yes.
And now everything out there is trying to take away the concept of self by the ways you're just explaining. Sorry to interrupt you, but
No, not at all.
The connection between the first story and what we're talking about now. And do you want to go back to that story? Because we might have not quite finished the punchline.
No, I think just the what you just said, Nancy, that it's a paradox because there's nothing wrong with realizing the self. It's the way the self creates its own individual choices, how the evaluation of choices are still for the good of the whole. So you see, it's a paradox because you are doing things that you want, but you're doing them selflessly. Practically every choice you make, you make it with an awareness that it's you who's making that choice. But I think there is the opportunity to choose whether you're going to be selfless or selfish. And being selfless doesn't mean that you are sacrificing yourself for others. It's loving yourself, giving yourself the well-being you deserve, and as a consequence, you can give it to everyone else. And I think that's where the virus became a problem, because instead of going in that direction, we went into a direction of self-service. So, I mean, as simple as it might sound, it's very complicated.
I think also because we might be getting jammed. I had something in my head, and I couldn't hold on to it. And it has something to do with the understanding of self. Oh, okay. When you're selfless, okay, when you're in a situation, not a suffering selfless, okay, a selfless, an empowered selfless, it's because you realize that everything that exists is you.
Exactly. So there's nothing wrong with actually acknowledging that you are like the I. So there's nothing wrong with saying I am, but I am is part of the we, which is I am still. You get what I'm saying? It's a weird paradox. It's multi layers of consciousness.
Yeah.
That at the end is the whole, which is God, the mind of God.
Mind of source. Let's use source.
I prefer source too.
Yeah, let's just kind of like, let's try to agree on certain terminology because we, you know, continually flip-flop. But between us guys, we'll decide that source is what we want to say when we think of the all-knowing, all-powerful entity that created everything. It's imagination. It just started thinking, oh my God, what have I done now? We're almost at the end of the show. This coming Saturday, Nora's got her show again, Dimensional Mind Talk, and it's going to come on at noon Eastern and it'll run till 2. And do you have anything planned yet?
Yes, I have a really great announcement, actually. I'm going to have a very special guest who has confirmed that she will be on the show with me, and that is my daughter. So I'm very, very excited to introduce her to you all. And I've been talking about her so much that I thought this is the most appropriate thing to just let her come on and, you know, for you to kind of experience her firsthand. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, this
is exciting. That's kind of my announcement, yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait for that.
Excellent. All right, then. So this show will be repeated at Tuesday at 4 to 6. And that's before the cosmic reality, which has moved up an hour. I like that time frame a lot better, the 6 to 8. Anyway, Colleen, thank you so very much. What do you got? Well, you got, good Lord, you got two stations running now. What's on what?
Good question. Coming up next, right at the moment I'm playing both, whatever's on one's playing on the other, simply because it's so much simpler at this point, because I'm still working with the schedule. Coming up next is the Fans of Whitley Strieber Show. His guest, Robert Schock, I guess it's Schock, S-C-H-O-C-H, New Forgotten Civilization Discoveries, the role of solar outbursts in our past and future, and now he's back with mind-bending new discoveries about why a great and very different past civilization disappeared, and why we should look at it very carefully to understand both the perils and the promises of our own future. And then after that, this is remarkable new discoveries in the Giza Plateau and how they relate to the vitrified areas found in such places as Scotland, where intense heat from above actually melted rock. And then there's Jeremy Vaney's Abductions and the Languages of the Heart. And then after that, at 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 Pacific, will be Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise. Has our enlightenment been obscured by social, cultural, and religious conditioning? Her guest will be Jason Gregory. And then after that is a new show that Barbara Three Crow has on These Changing Times Radio. That will be at 6 tonight. And this show is called Unraveling the Mystery. And then I'll end the evening. Well, no, I won't, because there's something after that. Then I'll be doing part 2 of Haggie Reads for You, Indiana Bigfoot, The Beautiful Mind by Edwina Cato. And I'll finish up this evening with another show from These Changing Times Radio. This is called The Big Puzzle with Barry. And then we go into Producer's Choice, which will be replays of today's shows.
Awesome. So go over to HaggieShack.com and, you know, you can have a day of it listening to good stuff. I thank you so much. Have a great day. Have a great, I'll see you on Saturday, Nora and Colleen. I hope you're going to be at least in the background.
Oh, I'll be listening, seeing if you're going like, what's going on?
Right. And, you know, just have a marvelous time when Rosalie gets there in your arms.
She should be home tomorrow.
Oh. Right. Bless her. Enjoy her to the fullest.
Oh, I will.
Cool.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Colleen.
Okay.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thanks, everybody out there. We'll see
Thank
you
next.
Be safe. Bye-bye.
Bye. Be safe. Bye.
Thank you for visiting. You have been listening to World Talk with Friends, a Haggie Shack Radio Productions
simulcast with Cosmic Reality Radio.